time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it is Thursday already. I'm Vanessa Richardson. My co-host is Paul Gallant. We got Sean Mapes behind the glass producing for us. As always, how you doing, Paulie G?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Still on my parents' couch. That situation is developing. My dad is getting his heart stents, actually, as we speak. So
okay. That's
not nerve-wracking at all.
Oh,
I'm not
wow. Nervous
at all.
Yeah, my God. I don't know how you're doing the show. I would be distracted as hell the entire time. You are a trooper, Vanessa.
We are powering through it, and we will talk about Bruce Arians, who, by the way, I did not think would retire. And he's out. He has decided to step away, and it seems like this was very planned, in my opinion. You and I might disagree on this, but Todd Bowles immediately takes over and is named head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's cool for a couple of different reasons. People love Todd Bowles. The players love Todd Bowles, and it's another minority head coach, which is great.
Arians and Bowles clearly have a connection. This goes way back to their time in Arizona. I got a question, though. Do you really believe that it was a retirement? Do you think that there was any shoving involved with said retirement? Do you think that Tom Brady sat Bruce Arians down in a wheelchair, got behind it, and then rolled it down a hill? Because that's the vibe that I'm getting based off of just the way that this offseason's gone, Vanessa. He retired for 40 days, and he comes back. And I'm trying to figure out as to why he did the retirement in the first place. And then why is he back with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
My only thing is that Tom Brady doesn't seem to be intimidated by head coaches that are difficult. He liked Bill O'Brien. He and Bill Belichick worked together for a long time. So to me, I don't think there's a coach out there that Tom Brady is going to be, quote unquote, afraid of. Now, is he at the point in his life where at 43 or whatever he is, he's saying, my preference is my preference and I'm not willing to waver on it? That's a strong possibility. I did hear Teddy Bruschi on ESPN say that he felt like Todd Bowles and Tom Brady could be a little bit of a better match chemistry-wise for a lot of different reasons. And so, I think there's a scenario, I guess, where multiple things can be true at one time.
That's
but
true.
I don't think Tom Brady would have pinned that long letter to Bruce Arians if he were really upset with him.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, and maybe this is just coming out of the Oscars, we do live in a world where the things that are made public to us are very often complete BS, right?
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that the Oscar slap was that. I'm just saying that they're putting a very neat bow atop of all of this transition. But, I mean, there was a time where Brady was in a power struggle with Bill Belichick, of all people.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out in Belichick's favor. And I'm sure that the Patriots are looking at themselves right now and thinking, shoot, maybe we should have had Bill Belichick retire, I say in quotation marks. Because that means they'd still have Tom Brady and they'd probably still be a legitimate contender instead of this sort of middle of the pack team that they are right now. So I go back, Vanessa, to a couple of stories. And look, it came from one player. And he actually had another story where it was shown that he might be a little bit full of it. But he, who is someone who played with Tom Brady and someone on the Bucs coaching staff.
Is it Rich Orn?
Rich Orenberger, correct. Yes.
Yeah.
So Orenberger said that there were times where Brady and Leftwich were together in the game meetings and stuff before in practice they were getting ready. But what am I talking about? Oh, yeah. They're just sitting down together watching film, like coming up with a game plan. And Bruce Arians would come in a little bit later and he would say, nah, we're not doing that. And I guess it got on Brady's nerves. I could see why Arians would do that. Arians is a smart offensive coach. But I could also see where Brady would get maybe a little bit annoyed with it because Brady is psychotic with his level of dedication. And Arians, who was retired for a couple of years, came back in. How would you be if you had retired for a couple of years, you came back in after having just won a Super Bowl? Maybe you're not Maybe you're not throwing 100 miles per hour every single day. So I could see where there might have been some conflict to the point where Brady was like, I'm tired of this. I want to do things my way, and that this was the compromise the Bucks and him came up with.
Brady is a psycho, and he expects everybody around him to be a psycho. To your point, Todd Bowles is at the point in his career where he's still hungry. He's still trying to get that head coaching job. And so he is going to have that hunger. He is going to be the guy that watches film for 5 hours and tells his wife, hey, I'm sleeping on the cot at the facility tonight, and that's just the way it is. To your point, Bruce Arians, a little bit of a different mold. Maybe Tom Brady was okay with that mold the first couple years in Tampa Bay and no longer is. I do think that, and I'm all for conspiracy theories.
Oh, shoot me one.
Let's say that Tampa Bay did sit Bruce Arians down and say, you're gone. And the narrative can either be that you were fired or that you want to pass along the torch to your young minority coach, who Bruce Arians, by all accounts, genuinely does love. That part's not fake. But if the Tampa Bay brass says, look, we'll give you a front office job, you're still going to get a paycheck for a year or two. And the narrative becomes that you gifted this great situation to a hardworking minority defensive coordinator.
It's a great look for Arians, and also he gets elevated to a front office role. So he's
and it's a great look for the Bucks, and Tom Brady comes back, and then the legacy if they win another Super Bowl.
Right.
All's well that ends well.
So that's why I'm going to this. Like, it would be great to believe that it's just Arians passing the torch, but isn't everything just so rosy and sunshiny with how they're trying to portray it versus what it probably is? Because generally there's conflict that leads to change, as opposed to just saying, you know, I've won all the battles, I've done all I need to do, and I'm ready to retire. Because these coaches are addicts. Like, they can't help it. Like, they might not be as committed when they come back in, but Vanessa, I feel like most coaches, when they go back to the day-to-day life, they get bored and they want to go back to football and living the life that they had lived for the majority of their lives.
You have to really be in a place where you're wanting. And I, again, like, since I was able to catch up a little bit with Sean Payton at the Super Bowl, he's at a point where he actually wants to see what could be next, whether that's broadcasting or whatever. But to your point, you have guys like Jason Witten. Now, Jason Witten obviously was not a coach. He was a player who go and try something else and they're miserable because they're not ready yet. And Tom Brady was at home with Giselle and his three kids for like 42 days and decided that getting absolutely railed by brutally heavy men was better than that.
Whoa.
So, I mean, every situation is different, but I tend to agree that more guys are in the coach that wants to come back and gets the itch camp than the coach that actually retires and genuinely is fine with it.
Is it bad that I am sidetracked by that little aside there? You know
what little aside?
Well, okay, I'm gonna space them apart so I don't say it and sound like I have a dirty mind. But
okay,
heavy men and being railed by.
Oh, Paul!
Well,
railed as in getting sacked.
Oh,
like,
my Tom bad.
Brady
okay.
Getting sacked by heavy men. That doesn't sound.
Listen, I you know you can't. You can't help but connect those two dots from time to time.
That's
it's a Thursday. We're almost at the weekend.
I didn't notice it until you said it.
It's my fault. I'm a terrible person.
No, but yeah, we'll see what happens. But I do know that there were conflicting reports about that.
What a crazy offseason it's been, huh?
I mean, insane.
Holy
crap. Tom Brady's path to the playoffs now, by the way. I mean, when you look at who else is. Could even particularly be in his way. Did he do a good job of almost guaranteeing when he came back that he has an easier slot to the playoffs?
Well, wait, do you feel like maybe him stepping away has led to other players leaving the conference? Like, I don't know. I guess it's probably the same as it was before, you know? Like, you still have Aaron Rodgers. He just doesn't have Devontae Adams now. You still have the Rams, who I imagine are going to be the same team. I don't know if anything's guaranteed, though, because last year I thought to myself, this Bucks team will probably be pretty close to as good as they were the year before. Mm-hmm. This time around, I don't know. I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to replicate it. And yeah, they're certainly getting a lot of the pieces that have been with them before to return. But at a certain point, you get old as a team. Even if Tom Brady is beating Father Time, you're telling me the rest of this roster is going to? So I still think they're going to be, I mean, they're still the best team in the NFC South. There's no arguing that. And they're still one of the top three teams in the conference. But, I mean, would you right now, Vanessa, say that 45-year-old Tom Brady and the Bucs are your number one team to make it to the Super Bowl this coming season?
No, I just think he is probably an easier path than the guys that are in, like, the AFC.
Oh, yeah, the AFC is miserable right now. Like, shoot, if you're the AFC, yeah, you definitely are envious of how easy it is going to be for potentially Brady, for Stafford, and for Rodgers again.
I'm just – how many men would be home with Giselle?
Me.
And decide that they wanted to go back to work?
Oh, no, I would never want to go back to work.
No.
I think if I marry Giselle, Vanessa, I'll be honest. I'm being a stay-at-home dad. I'm out. I'm out
absolutely
of the game. Yeah, like you can be the breadwinner. I have no shame in that. Please be the breadwinner. I just want to see you every single day. That's it. That's all I need.
I remember when there was an article that said that he went to bed at 9 p.m. It's like, wouldn't you? I mean, you're married to Giselle.
Maybe a little earlier. Yes, yeah.
9 p.m. bedtime seems
because you got to wake up early. Logical. Right, exactly. Right. Nothing nefarious. No railing or heavy men going on.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Yes, Paul, it was a crazy offseason. And it continues to be, particularly the month of March. We're going to recap the craziest stories and give you our pick. We would love to hear yours as well. So tweet us. I'm at Sports Vanessa. He's at Gallant Says. You can, of course, text the text line and let us know what you think the craziest NFL offseason story was. 713-780-3776. That's next.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Fun sports. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, what an off season it's been. There were a lot of crazy things that happened, and some of them involved Tom Brady. Some of them involved quarterbacks. Some of them involved Deshaun Watson, Tyreek Hill. There's been a lot. Paul, what is your pick? What is your pick for the craziest? Well, first of all, let's start out with this. What are your thoughts on this NFL offseason? Because you and I are still pretty young, but people that are in – that have covered the NFL for 40, 50 years have said this is the craziest NFL offseason. So we know that that's the case. What have been your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, we're still in our honeymoon phase of the show. And for it to happen the way that it's happened, I mean, I can't remember an offseason that's been more fun. That's for sure. I mean, you're getting curveballs left and right that you don't see coming. And, you know, that's putting aside what took place yesterday, where Bruce Arians either stepped down or was forced out by Tom Brady during an offseason where, for the Bucs, Tom Brady retired, Tom Brady unretired, and then this happened. I mean, and that's just the Bucs. That's not the other 31 NFL teams.
Right.
So it's been fun. I mean, compared to other ones, this has felt a lot more like the NBA, that's for damn sure. And if it's happening this way right now, where you're seeing desperate teams trading everything to get players that probably aren't going to sign extensions with their respective teams, I think that is a trend that's going to continue. So I think we're going to have more off seasons like this, where, say, next off season, is Lamar Jackson going to stay in Baltimore? Is DK Metcalf going to stay in Seattle? Those are the questions that I think are just going to continue to pop up every year. Are teams going to be willing to pay this gigantic kind of money to elite players? The only thing that I think could potentially stop that, Vanessa, from continuing is that, like, the teams that acquire these players have disastrous 2022 campaigns, but I don't see that happening. I think they'll all at the very least be relevant, all the teams that made big moves this year.
In the age of player empowerment and in the age of what we just saw from Deshaun Watson, if you put the allegations aside, him being able to get that $230 million contract guaranteed. And Steve Bisciotti from the, you know, owner of the Ravens, just talking about how that could make negotiations complicated. I think the off seasons are going to be, you know, I'm all for player empowerment, but it is getting to the point to where it seems like at the snap of a finger, if a guy's like, yeah, I'm not really happy here, it's like, okay, well, let's start looking for him, you know, and then there for a trade destination. And then there's a lot of back and forth. So I think things like this are going to continue. I don't know that it will be to this caliber, because remember, this isn't a good NFL draft class for quarterbacks. So, you know, I think the quarterback carousel was what it was. What is your pick for the craziest offseason story that we saw?
I think because it hit close to home for me, given that I was covering this situation for the last 2 years in Seattle. But I never for a second believed that the Seahawks would trade Russell Wilson. Not for 1 second. And this is the one that I think has really just changed my perception of this. Because for the longest time, I was not saying that, hey, like, quarterback empowerment's never going to happen, but I'm not going to believe it until I see it. And when you had last offseason with Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, Rodgers publicly whining, Wilson whining through second parties and third parties and stuff, that made me feel like we won't see this happen anytime soon. But then this offseason took place, and the Seahawks are claiming like they're still contenders. Maybe they're just lying to fans, but I was stunned that they decided to pull the trigger and move on from him when their head coach is 70 years old, and to trade him for a haul that I don't think is as good as what the Texans got. I mean, I know that, yeah, Noah Fant was involved in the trade and stuff, but Drew Lock stinks and Shelby Harris does nothing for me. So I'm stunned by that one still. Like, I can't believe that the Seahawks decided to make that move. It didn't seem like they needed to.
So why did you think that they would not trade Russell Wilson? Because I think a lot of people thought that they would when he talked about the destinations he'd like to go to, and he kind of seemed to be doing the passive-aggressive thing.
Well, no matter how annoying he was, Vanessa, he still was a good quarterback. Not a great one the last year and a half. Maybe that's why they thought to themselves, well, he's going to ask for a ton of money this coming offseason when his contract hits the end. We don't want to deal with the negotiations. But I always thought, if you got a great quarterback and you think he's going to be great going forward, you just give him the franchise tag. Like, so, oh, you're not going to sign a contract? Franchise tag. Sucks to be you. You're stuck here. You know? And yeah, you're going to overpay, but it's always worth overpaying a good plus quarterback. To me, it was just, why would you move on from a guy who you know is good when you know it's so difficult to find that guy again? You know, I mean, he's the best quarterback in Seahawks history. It's not particularly close. Like, who's number two? Matt Hasselbeck? Like, you know, it hasn't been great.
7629 says the crazy story is the Browns saying they want an adult in the room and they're trading for Deshaun Watson, who refused to play after getting a massive contract extension. And then I can't really read the rest of the text. Yeah, I mean, look, Deshaun Watson, in and of itself, that entire saga was an absolutely crazy part of the offseason. But my pick is just all of the additions, and this isn't super specific, but to the AFC West, because this was in a very short period of time. It's one thing if a division explodes over the course of the draft, the offseason, and over a couple of months, you say, wow, this division has gotten really strong. In a few weeks, you saw the AFC West add Russell Wilson, Randy Gregory, and DJ Jones to the Broncos. Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson, Sebastian Joseph to the Chargers. Devontae Adams, Chandler Jones, Rockyson to the Raiders. The Chiefs added some pieces, including, you know, Justin Reed, which I don't know if he's in the category as those other guys, but I think that he has the potential
better than
to
all of them.
Yeah, so I think my craziest offseason story is just how much the AFC West exploded as a division.
It's a good call. I mean, the Raiders are as close to being legit without a great quarterback as you can be, at least on paper, you know? Not just Devontae Adams, but the Chandler Jones signing is, I think, a hell of a signing. And then you got Denver with Russell Wilson, and then throw into the mix too that you have in Kansas City, Tyreek Hill. He's gone. I mean, shoot, you just moved on from him. Like, that to me is another crazy one, because I just feel like he's one of those difference makers that stands apart from other players across the league. I don't even include Devontae Adams in that conversation. Adams is a more complete wide receiver as a whole, but Hill, I just think, is someone that is so hard to stop, at least with his current physical status. you know, maybe a couple of years from now, that's a little bit different. But
how crazy is it? It was such a crazy offseason that Aaron Rodgers staying in Green Bay after pitching a fit for a year isn't even our craziest story.
Oh, yeah, you forgot about it completely.
I mean, it's insane.
You know, yeah, that is an interesting part of it where you don't even think about Aaron Rodgers at all anymore. I think we're all kind of happy with that, right? I mean, he's a little annoying, just a little bit.
He's gotten worse. He's gotten cockier. He's gotten worse. He was, you know, what's funny is that it wasn't that long ago that when he would go on Jeopardy and, you know, be the guest star on certain guest appearances on TV shows, people were talking about how like genuinely likable he was.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of all turned. And it was not just because of the vax thing. People are always like, oh, it's because it was a myriad of different things that led to him being labeled as unlikable.
Right.
What was the craziest offseason story, guys? Tell us and let us know. We've gotten a couple from the text line. Craziest thing, this is from 9891. Craziest thing by far is the Browns giving a fully guaranteed contract and the no trade clause being used as a tool to force a way out.
That is something
NFL NFL needs to fix this or the NFL could end up like the NBA, blah, blah, blah. Good point.
Well, okay. So you're definitely right in that right now you are seeing the no trade clause essentially used as a trade maker. It is an interesting development. You would think that wouldn't be the case. But is this bad in the NFL's eyes? Is this bad for the bottom line? Like, I don't think it is. It's bad for some fan bases, but it's bad for individual fan bases where if you have now the NFL having an offseason like this every single March leading up to the draft, then the NFL is one step further towards being the dominant sport for all 12 months of the year. And it's going to always be hard for them to occupy the conversation in late May, June, July, until the preseason starts in August. But if you can get free agency to really hit you like this, and conversations about the drama of the NFL during the offseason and the games during the regular season, I mean, how do you compete with that if you're any other sports league? A lot of people like the NBA's offseason better than the actual regular season. I would actually count myself in that. You know, like we're at the point now in the NBA season where once the NCAA tournament's done, we're going to be like, can we start with the NBA playoffs now? So
What really proved your point was the NFL Combine, because this is not a year full of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watsons and this is not a year where, that was one of the main narratives, were that there just weren't a lot of superstar quarterbacks at all, certainly. And then, other than the like big Georgia guys, there just weren't a lot of storylines going into this combine.
Yeah.
And yet the ratings for the combine were stupid.
Right.
So it is crazy to think about how dominant the league is. And if you talk to people that cover the NFL and that is their beat, they'll tell you that they really don't feel like they have like a solid time off where nothing's going on.
No, not anymore.
To where people that cover MLB are like, yeah, I don't work when baseball isn't happening.
But they should, because if you want your sport to survive, you need to, do things to help it survive.
But they don't.
Caretakers of the game. I mean, it must be nice to be essentially like a teacher. You know, where you're not doing anything during the offseason. You're not working every day, every single day. I'm jealous. It must be a nice life.
Only teachers don't get paid at all.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
People that cover baseball do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's annoying. Maybe we should change that. Paul Gallant for president 2024. I'm going to force all baseball writers to have jobs during the offseason. That's my only platform.
So they won't tweet about Jason Isbell and Bruce Springsteen as much.
Or so they won't block me. How about that?
Yeah, okay, so here's my question for you. What league writers have blocked you the most? Is it baseball?
I think it's baseball. I could be wrong. There's a couple in the NFL. Duff Kleiman doesn't count because he just steals people's content and repurposes it as his own. But yeah, Mike Freeman, Mike Silver. There was a time where Adam Schefter blocked me. Probably the NFL. Schefter
unblocked
me, at least.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Opening day is in a week. We discuss the Astros and some BS said by a Yankees person. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Paul and I are talking about the fact that we literally cannot figure out coffee machines half the time.
Yeah, the old ones we're talking about.
The new Keurigs are self-explanatory.
Pretty self-explanatory. What I do with the new Keurig, I've got the reusable K-cups. I get myself some coffee grounds. Usually get some basic stuff like pumpkin or Texas pecan. Texas pecan from H-E-B bleeps. That stuff is like crack. I love it. I can drink that black. I don't need any sweetener in it. It tastes delicious. But there's also a pumpkin kind that they have at Kroger. So you messed up the coffee machine at your parents' house, huh?
I accidentally left it on. I don't think it's messed up completely, but I might have to buy my mom a new one.
Oh, no. Well, those aren't that expensive. Mr. Coffees aren't that expensive, right?
No, I'll buy her a nicer one because I'm a good child.
Yeah, do
it.
She's like, listen, I did this on purpose to help you bring you into the 21st century. Then you get like a really tricky coffee machine and they don't know how to work and they're going to be calling you every hour. How does this work?
We must have the same parents. Mm-hmm. All right. Opening day for the Astros is in a week. Finally, after a little bit of a delay due to the lockout, the Astros begin their season. Justin Verlander will not be pitching on opening day. It will be Valdez and then Odorizzi, and then Justin Verlander will be on that third day.
Well, that's a little surprising that Odorizzi is number two, not Verlander. Framber Valdez getting the nod opening day. It's a big moment for him, and I'm curious as to how he's going to do this year. You know, I think you go back to last season, and in particular the playoffs, he has that awesome game against the Red Sox. What was it, game five? And then you go to the World Series, and he gets shelled in game one, and then he comes in game five, and he didn't pitch so well either. And you sort of wonder, okay, well, what kind of Framber are you going to be getting for the most part this year? I think the thing that's always been the question with him is how consistent can he be? 28 years old, you would think that if it's ever going to happen, this is the year for it to happen. I would say a hearty pat on the back and a round of golf claps for Framber getting that opening day nod, though. That's got to mean a whole lot to him. So congratulations to him on that.
Good for him. Alex Bregman, I think we've discussed this with Astros fans at length. We're wanting to see Alex Bregman from like 2019 rather than the Alex Bregman that we've seen. And you brought up the word consistency with Framber Valdez. That's another thing that I definitely want to see from Bregman. And I think he's capable of it. But that's another piece of that Astros team that I would like to see improve.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, got a long season to figure everything out. I just want to get started, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait for Thursday. I even saw yesterday, Vanessa, the Mariners tweet a video, and it was from the one time I think that the Astros lost to the Mariners last year when Kendall Graveman came in and the Mariners hit the walk-off grand slam, but then the Mariners got like their asses kicked by the Astros the next two games. And I thought to myself, man, I'm really excited for the Astros-Mariners games that are going to happen this season. I think it's going to be a pretty good series, finally. Which has not been the case for years and years and years because the Astros just stuffed them in a locker every season.
Meanwhile, Yankees general manager Brian Cashman, somebody that is, so beloved in Houston, addressed New York's World Series drought. This was on Thursday. This is earlier today. And he decided to literally blame everything on Houston, which I know, Paul, you're probably so shocked about. He said the only reason that they haven't won another World Series is because of the Astros. He said, quote, "The only thing that stopped us in 2017 was something that was so illegal and horrific." Cashman told The Athletic, quote, "So I get offended when I start hearing we haven't been to the World Series since 09 because I'm like, well, I think we actually did it the right way. Pulled it down, brought it back up, drafted well, traded well, developed well, signed well. The only thing that derailed us was a cheating circumstance that threw us off."
Oh, boy.
Brian Cashman via The Athletic.
So the question that was asked was about, as you said, Vanessa, the World Series drought. I think the reason that he reacted as strongly as he did is because he's being defensive. But there's no legitimate defense for being the New York Yankees, the most valuable franchise in sports, with a TV deal that and a cable network that costs like almost $3.5 billion, there is no way that the Yankees can justify not having won a World Series since 2009. So Cashman's probably looking at himself in the mirror when he hears that criticism and he thinks to himself, well, we should have won it in 2017. But should they have? And I think that's, first off, pretty amusing to just forget when you have generally year in, year out, the top payroll in baseball, at least in the past, to say, yeah, we didn't score two runs in the last two games of the series against the Astros. We scored one run, in fact. But, you know, it's because we did things the right way. Well, how about score, I don't know, any runs those last two games with this roster that you constructed that was your baby, Brian Cashman? Like, where was that production? And
the bottom line is that he knows he's on the hot seat. I think he feels that he's on the hot seat.
He should
seat,
be,
and
in
theory, he should be. Now, I don't know that he actually is.
That's what I was asking some of my Yankee fan friends this morning, Vanessa. I was like, wait a second. Like, it is kind of interesting to note that he's still here, having last won a World Series in 2009, because the old Yankees would have fired his ass a while ago.
Maybe they're being more patient, but I know that what probably has not helped is that massive contract that they gave former Astro star Garrett Cole.
No.
And then the sticky stuff rules rained it down.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, isn't it depressing what the Yankees have become, Vanessa? We all like a good sports villain. I know that a lot of people like rooting against the Astros right now. I know
it's part of what makes sports fun.
Right. The Yankees always used to be fun to root against, but now they're just sad and depressing. Like, they're just whining constantly about something that took place 5 years ago. Well, you've had 5 years to win anything since then. You haven't done anything. The Los Angeles Dodgers have just completely replaced them. The Yankees used to be the team that during the offseason, oh, wow, you got one over on the Yankees this year. Well, next year, they're going to sign all of your best players. They're going to seduce them away with a big wad of cash. Well, now the Dodgers are the team that does that. And the Dodgers, at least with all their whining after 2017, they have won a World Series. Maybe there's an asterisk there because it wasn't a full season. But the Yankees have just turned into this sad group of whiners. And I think it's just bad for the sport. Like, move on and get back to doing what you're supposed to do, which is win every single year. Baseball's better when the Yankees are better, as much as we hate to admit it. And while I'm enjoying the fact that they're not good right now, the way that they're acting is so unbecoming. Like, this is what the Mets should be doing. This is what loser franchises
do. It's a great point.
And here you are, like, we got robbed 5 years ago. Like, get over it.
This is, I always appreciate authenticity from GMs and head coaches and managers. If Brian Cashman authentically feels this way, then good for him for saying it. My problem is I don't think he does. I think he knows deep down that the Astros would have beat them anyway. I think he knows deep down that cheating runs rampant throughout the league. I'm certainly not excusing the level to which the Astros cheated, but I my problem is that I don't think Brian Cashman actually feels like they got cheated. I think that he knows he's on the hot seat, and he's very intelligent and understands that as soon as he starts talking about this, subconsciously there will be some Yankees fans that go, yeah, he's right. He did get cheated.
A lot of them do. I mean, look, New Yorkers aren't the smartest people. You pay $6,000 to live in a 200-square-foot apartment.
With no yard.
Right. I mean, shoot, if you get anything close to a yard in New York City, you're lucky. And I don't hate New York City entirely, but New Yorkers, and I would say in particular Yankee fans, are generally idiots. So with that in mind, like, you have to kind of be nice to them and be kind to them. I don't care that the Yankee fans are whining about this. Of course they are. Fans do this. But the players themselves that continuously hold on to this as if they were wronged in some way and like they had won the World Series that year, it's just laughable. That team was good. They were ahead of schedule, and they had a really nice playoff run. But, okay, you beat the Astros. Say you did. Say the Astros didn't cheat, and you got on past, even though, you know, you could argue the Yankees were cheating with all the runs that they scored at home in that series, you know. There's a case to be made that it was going around with the Dodgers, with the Yankees, with every single team that was in those playoffs. Say you get past them. It's super arrogant to assume you would have beaten that Dodger team. That Dodger team had you outgunned. And that Dodger team has been in the same spot year in, year out, the same way the Astros kind of have over the last few years. The Yankees haven't. The Yankees have been in a clear tier below the Astros and the Dodgers. So I that kind of annoys me as well. Like, oh, yeah, you're going to beat the Dodgers that year? Oh, sure. Yeah, that would have happened. No, I don't believe that for a second.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we do a deep dive into song choices by a certain quarterback prospect and somebody in Houston signing a pretty big contract extension. That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, and we are rolling along on a Thursday. One of the kind of nice stories from this last college football season was University of Cincinnati kind of emerging from nowhere, led by Luke Fickell. I covered sports in Cincinnati for 2 years, and it is a town that up until last year where UC and the Bengals were good, there was a lot of sadness. And I don't mean this disrespectfully, but when people are like, Houston sports are miserable, like I after having worked in Cincinnati, I just can't vibe with it.
Fair enough. They have, I think, pound for pound, the most dislikable professional owners that sports have ever seen in Cheapo and Mike Brown and what's her face, the old racist lady who's not there anymore.
Marge Schott.
Right. And then who's ever afterwards hasn't been a whole lot better. And you've seen what the Reds have done this offseason. Do you allow yourself, Vanessa, to feel like a fan of Cincy? Because you're in that weird spot where college football-wise, I'm not even sure who the hell you would be rooting for having grown up in Indiana. I don't know if you decided to like jump on the Notre Dame bandwagon because you are you're a Hoosiers gal for basketball, correct?
Yeah, so one of my biggest pet peeves are people that in Indiana who say they like IU basketball but Notre Dame football, and there's a lot of that. I am IU all the way. I'm Indiana all the way. However, when a school from Indiana does well, like Purdue, I would have loved to have seen Purdue in the Final Four.
Okay.
So I would have, you know, cool for basketball. Purdue. I mean, I like when Indiana schools do well, but I grew up a diehard Indiana fan. Here's how I feel about Cincinnati sports. I was only there for 2 years, but when you work in a city and you like the people in the city, you want them to do well. And you want the sports, you want the athletes you cover to do well. I have a little bit of a deeper connection to Houston because I've been here longer. I'm more integrated. I did news and sports in Cincinnati. So in Houston, I've done sports since the time I got here. But I do want Cincinnati sports, like they had so many miserable years. And those fans are so diehard that they deserved a trip to the Super Bowl and they deserved a trip to the Final Four for football.
Right. And you're trying to wonder what kind of a fan base would, I don't know, have gone through maybe more over the last like 10, 20, 30 years. But there's just been a nothing burger in Cincinnati. The best thing that they had probably sports-wise before the Super Bowl appearance was when they traded for Ken Griffey Jr. or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing there, every now and then UC basketball or Xavier basketball would have a good year here and there, but
yeah, they do have good college basketball. That's true.
Miserable city for sports for a long time. So Desmond Ridder kind of brought new life into the University of Cincinnati, quarterback for UC. And although he's not thought to be the top QB prospect, he's still well respected. And a lot of people have talked about his upside. He was on Good Morning Football and, I'm big on music. He had a very interesting choice when they asked him to pick a song for them to play. Here's Desmond Ridder.
I'm supposed to ask you what makes you stand out as a quarterback. And we're going to do it in our own way. We already know. What makes you stand out is decision-making and spontaneity. I go to the commercial break. You come on, you say hello. We're all saying, oh, nice to come on the show. We're playing music. You say, wow, you guys got good music. And so we put you on the spot, sort of an impromptu test. We said, Desmond, pick any song you want, and we'll play it for you here for the rest of the commercial break. Tell the people at home what song you picked and why you picked it so quickly, because we thought it was amazing.
We blew up.
Yeah, I said Avril Lavigne, Complicated, because I'm more of an early 2000s guy. And you know, this whole process is kind of complicated, too. You know, you don't really get to have a lot of say in things. Wow. And, you know, you kind of just sit back and let the balls fall where they fall. So, yeah, and that was a song I used to jam to in the car with my mom all the time when I was a kid.
Steven got all right. Cheesy dad radio transitions going on there. He's like, well, you know, the draft, it's complicated. So good job by him there.
That was a good transition.
Gotta make things so complicated. Right?
If Kyle Brandt or Peter Schrager had asked him to describe the draft, I'd be okay with that song choice. But they just told him to pick a song in general, and he picked that.
Well, what would
it
you
was
pick?
An odd choice to me. Oh, I mean, if someone's like, hey, Vanessa, pick a random song, I'm going to be like Tom Petty or Led Zeppelin or whatever.
Oh, you got to pick one, though. No, you're giving me options. You have to pick one right now. You're on the spot. You are now Desmond Riddler. Ritter.
We're doing Mary Jane's Last Dance by Tom Petty.
Okay.
You go.
Is that time, Mary Jane? It's not a song about marijuana.
Right? What's yours?
Oh, shoot.
Pick a song now.
Damn, the first thing that came up was Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
There you go. Avril Lavigne, Complicated, was Desmond Ritter's first choice, but I did like how he transitioned it to your point.
Okay. Yeah, I did too. Okay. Listen, I like people that are open with the music that they like, because I think there's a lot of us that we try to hide the songs that we're maybe a little bit embarrassed of liking. I mean, how many people that are my age had a little pop punk phase, which is essentially a bunch of emo music? My daddy,
am I more than you bargained for? Yeah.
Right, exactly. Or, my daddy hates me, I'm not perfect. You know, like generally songs like that.
See, I sing a...
Well, that one's kind of a real song. It's from
Am
Simple
I More
Plan.
Sugar, We're Going Down... Oh,
okay. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Okay. We're going down something...
Katy Perry Fireworks is the guilty... 8755 says Katy Perry Firework is the guilty pleasure song for him.
That,
I love it.
That Katy Perry drives me crazy because all of her songs are very
Katy
catchy,
Perry.
But they're not good. And they get stuck in your head so easily. But like, that's the point. I mean, she's essentially what? The 1-877 Cars for Kids commercial in musical form, right? I mean, that commercial's great because it gets stuck in your head. Nothing against them. It's great marketing. That's, I guess, it's a strategy. You just try to be annoying to the point where no one's going to be able to forget your song.
She did. She kissed a girl and she liked it. meanwhile, Dana Holgorsen, head coach of the University of Houston Cougars, just signed a contract extension. It was announced this morning through the 2027 season. Houston Vice President for Athletics Chris Pesman formally announced the 6-year extension, of course, comes off of that record-setting 2021 season, 11 consecutive victories, an appearance in the American Championship game, Birmingham Bowl victory. So good for Dana Holgorsen. Look, I mean, I think a lot of people when he came in had some questions about how that transition from West Virginia would be. And I know that University of Houston was looking for a good kick in the butt for that football program, but Holgorsen has gotten it done.
And this guarantees that he's going to be there as they join the Big 12. And I think it starts 2023 when UH will be in. So there might be a year where they're in the same division as Texas, assuming Texas doesn't get out of the Big 12 for the SEC as early as they possibly can find a way to get out of that contract. That'll be interesting to see. You know, I'm happy for the Cougs from this perspective. They've been dying to get into a big conference for a while, and maybe over a year where they share the conference with Texas and Oklahoma. They're supposed to be there for 2023 and 2024. What happens? We have seen the Longhorns lose to bleeping Kansas a couple of times, so I'd be sweating a little bit if I were a Horns fan. Not gonna lie. And good for Dana Holgorsen. He's gonna be sticking around. I think that's really good news for them as they jump into this conference, because they could potentially right out of the chute be the dominant power, especially if you do.
I think continuity.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Continuity is really important. Kelvin Sampson, when they announced the move to the Big 12, said, this is a football move. It ain't about me and it ain't about basketball. Kelvin Sampson's right. It is about football. But I think if they, you know, locking Kelvin Sampson up definitely was good too, because football and men's basketball are definitely the primary sports there. All right. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about the NFL, the move with Bruce Arians, and what that means for Tom Brady. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.